All right. Hi, everyone. Good to see you all, and thanks for joining us. This is Dr. Will Tuttle, and it is Thursday, July 17th, 2025. So glad that we can get together on our World Peace Diet Circle gathering on the third Thursday like we do at 5 p.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Hawaii time, I know now, and 8 p.m. out there on the far East Coast. And I am not sure if we got other people from, we've been having people from Europe and also New Zealand or Australia joining us recently. So congratulations, Gino. I hear that you're a birthday man today, I believe.
Yes, yes. Very, very important holiday. Thank you.
The whole planet is celebrating your, you came to planet Earth. We're so glad.
Yay. Blessings to everyone.
The Gino infallibility. So, it's great. The years keep making us more valuable, I think, to our society. We get more experience, more understanding. And in traditional societies, the elders were really the most valuable resource they had. And nowadays, it seems like it's a throwaway. Many elders are just seen as irrelevant, so we need to kind of turn that around and be examples of vegan living, I think, and stay abreast of what's going on and cultivate our spirituality. I think it's so important because our planet needs that, I think, more than anything right now. So what we normally do, as you all know, is we jump in with our meditation at the beginning, and then we can open it up for questions and comments. And so let's go ahead and do that. We're here at home in California, so I'm at the piano. And we can turn our attention within and join together in our meditation time. It's best if we keep our microphones unmuted, I think. Muted, actually. Thanks. To open our hearts to the ever-shining light that is always shining at the very heart of our being, in our heart, in our mind, in every cell, and give thanks for this precious opportunity of a human birth and this precious vehicle that we have for a few decades here. We give thanks for all of our loved ones. For our friends and neighbors and colleagues and everyone who is in the movement to help liberate animals and liberate humanity and ecosystems, all living beings from the delusions of herderism and the commodification of living beings. We give thanks that we are, each one of us, on a path that leads to ever greater understanding, compassion and respect, kindness and freedom, opening up to the inner and outer beauty that is the truth of all manifestations of life. When we see beyond the outer appearances to the source, of all living beings. And we give thanks that we are connecting ever more deeply with the purpose that we are here to fulfill, the unique reason that we are on this earth. Our mission here, that only we know in our heart, knowing that we are at a fundamental level always united and one with the infinite love that is the source of all life. So we send our love now to all of our colleagues, to the whole human family, to the whole earth, to all the animals, to all of our relations. All the future generations and all the past generations, to all the nature spirits, the devas and other non-visible beings, we give thanks for all those who have been teachers in our life, who have, by their example and awareness, helped us to realize deeper truths. And we give thanks for the great teachings of all the wisdom traditions. And that we can be part of the awakening of human consciousness on this earth. Knowing that every day we are deepening our connection with our inner guidance system. And unfolding the inner beauty that we are. We send especially our loving thoughts to those who are being abused and harmed, whether they're humans or animals, and also to those who may be the agents of this abuse, understanding that in the great scheme, we all play many roles. Sending love and compassion to all beings. With every inhalation now, we engender in our heart this feeling of loving kindness. And as we exhale, we radiate love and benevolence in all directions simultaneously, like a great expanding sphere of love flowing out into our community and into our world, bathing everyone in love and the great wish that they be happy and have all the causes of happiness, abiding in our true home of love, and now we engender in our heart the feeling of compassion, great feeling of yearning that others be free from suffering and from all the causes of suffering. And with every exhalation, we radiate compassion to all living beings in all directions, in all times. May all beings be free from suffering, and may we continue to act to help relieve the suffering of others, to purify our consciousness, to allow the spirit of compassion to flow through every thought, word, and deed. With every inhalation, now we engender in our heart the feeling of joy, the great joy that is our true nature. And as we exhale, we radiate joy, just allowing it to overflow from our heart and filling the whole world with the truth of joy, the great joy that is beyond any reasons in the outer world. Finally, now with every inhalation, we engender in our heart the feeling of peace and harmony, the great peace that is always present, especially when we engender in our heart the feeling of love and compassion and joy. We are at peace. We are abiding in gratitude and harmony, and with every exhalation we radiate peace to all directions. May peace abide on earth for all beings and beyond, and all of the interdimensional regions. Breathing and radiating peace, seeing our whole beautiful earth bathe in the light of peace. Abiding in our true home, abiding in love, abiding in compassion, abiding in joy, abiding in peace, breathing and radiating love, compassion, joy, and peace. So as we close our meditation time together, we give thanks. For the one life that lives through us all as beauty and truth, as freedom, kindness, creativity, celebration of our potential. The great adventure of a human life. May all be happy, may all be at peace, may we continue to build a more enlightened society that reflects the truth that we are. So it is. Okay, thank you everyone for our joining together in our meditation time. Thank you, Yuma, our piano, and everyone who helped make this piano. I guess that was a lot of people. And to help bring us together. So this is, as you know, this is our third Thursday. It's our time to discuss spirituality or veganism or politics or whatever we want that's related basically to the World Peace Diet themes of human liberation, animal liberation, and questioning the official narratives that promote exploitation on this planet. And so if anyone has anything you'd like to specifically bring up, just let me know. We've had a wonderful month, I have to say. You can raise your hand or press star six or whatever. Working with the people in Taiwan. Thanks to Lisa, who's been helping with that. And we're going to get the Food for Freedom and I think World Peace Way also translated and published in Taiwanese. And the woman, we've been there quite a few times back in the good old days before COVID, and giving lectures and concerts and putting on events and promoting veganism, mainly through the Buddhist groups there. And I always say it, when people say, what's the most vegan place in the world? I think it's definitely Taiwan. I mean, it's just amazing how veganism is just pervades the whole society. Any restaurant you go, anywhere you go, and vegan schools, vegan hospitals, vegan millions of people doing these things. But anyway, so we had a lot of inspiration, and they just asked me if they could publish some of my quotes, I guess, that I said when I was there on their TV show about their school. They have this beautiful school for children from age like 5 all the way up through high school. And it's all vegan, and they grow their own food, and these kids are so obviously smart and happy and work together. I mean, it was really like such a refreshing, beautiful thing. It really gave me hope in humanity, you know, when I saw that school and the kids and the way they were with each other. And we spent the whole day with them. And so I just found out, though, it's kind of neat. You know, we have a number of CD albums of original music out here in the States, and they had the idea the album that they really love is the album called Animal Songs, which is the one, did it many years ago, and it has the voices of animals blended in. And so they asked if they could have permission to just market that album in Taiwan. And so I said, sure. So they've been marketing it for quite a few years, and it really sells a lot. They sell a whole lot of that because they just love, I guess, the music reminds them of veganism and animals. You know, this is cows and pigs and chickens and turkeys, ducks, geese, lambs and calves and all these animals' voices, you know, pervading the music. And we've had people here in this country say they went vegan just listening to the Animal Songs CD. Because you hear the sound of the cows or the pigs. But then, what I was going to say is kind of a neat thing happened the other day. Ruby, the woman, Ruby and her husband Gordon, she was my translator in all the lectures I gave, many of them anyway. And wonderful person, a yoga teacher there. And Gordon's an incredible guy. He's invented, I should just mention, he invented this device that can go into the ocean and just scoop up all the plastic pollution, anything like styrofoam, fishing nets, plastic, you know, these gigantic plastic garbage patches. And he worked with some top level scientists, and he showed us the system. He hasn't set it up there in a factory, but they can put it on a boat and put it out in the ocean, and it just digests this plastic, anything, and converts it into this black powder that can be used in copier machines and diesel fuel, which is so pure that he actually ran a Mercedes car in there on this diesel fuel and had me go down and inhale and breathe in the exhaust from that diesel. And it was fragrant and delicious. I mean, it was like nothing like the kind of diesel we had. You could kill you if you did that. So it's really remarkable. And I wonder, why don't they just do that? Go out there and just you could completely eliminate that whole thing. Anyway, that's Gordon, her husband. But what I was going to say, it was kind of neat. I mean, it's so amazing to be the gifts that we've had traveling around the world and meeting these amazing people. I can't even tell you. But the kind of neat thing was that when we were there last time, which is 2019, right before COVID, they asked me one afternoon if I would go into a recording studio and just record some music, some pieces. And so I did, and then I never thought much more about it since then. And now I just found out a couple of days ago that in the meantime, they actually created two albums of music, Will Tuttle music, and it's like selling big time in Taiwan. They have this whole website, and it's all in Chinese. I can't figure it out, but it's like all these pieces that I played one after the other. I just kind of composed and improvised for like a few hours in the studio. And so I don't know what's going to happen. But anyway, I should show it to you, Lisa, because it's all in Chinese. It's not one word in English. I don't know. But they somehow got me in so I can at least hit play and play all the different pieces. I go, oh, yeah, I remember I playing that one. You know, they're different from anything I have on these albums. So, you know, there's all these unexpected blessings that seem to happen, you know, because I just love the idea that at any point, I'm sure this is true, that someone is playing my music somewhere in the world, you know, because we get thousands and I get on Apple iTunes, they tell me every month how many, you know, listens, and it's thousands of listens. And through iTunes and then CDs and everything, and same thing with Madeline's art. So I think, you know, the thing is to just plant seeds and just put it out there and somehow it touches people, you know. And I think sometimes in many ways words are helpful, books are helpful, speeches and talks and all that, but the arts are so powerful, you know, music and art and poetry and dance and so forth. These really touch people and the feelings, and I think they can open us up. So I think it's really neat to see what people are doing. There's a lot of positive things happening. It's easy to get kind of caught up in the terrible things we think are happening. They seem to be happening. But to remember that most people are really doing their best, and we just need to kind of awaken the slumbering consciousness of humanity to get beyond this idea that animals are mere commodities to be eaten. And I think there's a tremendous enthusiasm to be tapped into with that whole thing. So anyway, I wanted to share that, and then I'm trying to think if there's anything else. Some of you got to the talk we had yesterday with Gabriel on the peace. It's joy and freedom on the vegan path, and then it's peace. It was peace with all cultures, and I thought it was great. He really started out with this idea of all my relations in the Native American tradition, that peace with all cultures means not just among human cultures, but with the animals and plants and I would say insects and non-visible beings as well. And veganism does do that. That's the beautiful thing. You know, with vegan living, we're living a life, especially if it's organic. Madeline always says, don't just say vegan. It's organic vegan. Whole food, organic vegan. That really does, I think, in many ways, the underlying philosophy of that and the practicality of it, especially if it's not just food, but everything, you know, whatever we're buying and how we're living and speaking and relating, it really does continually plant seeds that help bring harmony to our world. And I really hope that more people begin to understand this. And I know there's tremendous resistance from powerful forces that would not like to see that happen. But at the grassroots level, we can continue to do this. So that's what those are a few things I just wanted to mention. Does anyone have anything else you'd like to me to focus on specifically? I have a few other things I want to talk about too, but I just thought I don't want to dominate the whole conversation here by any means. But if anyone has anything else you want to share? Yes, Gino.
Yeah.
Thanks for your music too. I really appreciate your. I have to say, I've seen some of your offerings, and your voice is beautiful, and I think it's really great, you know, just to touch people's hearts with your music, so thanks for doing that.
Yeah, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Today, I got an email. I'm part of a group that Wayne Shung, formerly of DXC, and boy, does he have wonderful writings all the time that he sends everyone that are members, and he's no longer with DXC. But he left for a lot of good reasons, in my opinion. Not that I'm down on DXC, but this is a long, long letter he wrote. And it's all about effective activism today. And I also heard this from another leader in the movement as well. And a lot of the old school stuff is just not sustaining any momentum for veganism about the animals. You know, you can do a die-in or whatever, but and people might get excited for a little while and then it's over. Or let's say you have 6 million people, you know, marching against the king. And I knew when that happened, that's great. But I thought, okay, now what are you going to do next? What's going to happen now? Nothing, of course, all these huge crowds. So he is writing, I don't know if I'm going to do justice to what he said here, but he's talking about institutional scaffolding, meaning that a lot of movements have built their movement by affiliating themselves with other existing institutions. And by doing that, then they were able to disrupt other institutions. Okay, a key example would be the Tea Party or MAGA affiliating themselves with the Republican Party. And there already were some things in common with it, but they did just right and just enough to have a huge, powerful overload. Same thing for Martin Luther King. He was a minister, and that made it safer for people to really listen to him and move forward. So what Wayne is going to do is he's going to move to New York City into a ministry, and he's joining a seminary in New York City next month. And I guess we'll find out from there what he's going to do. But that's a big move. Yeah. I'm not sure what he means by that 100%, but it's a big move, whatever it is.
Right. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. That is interesting. Yeah, he's going to Union Theological Seminary, which is a famous seminary. Oh. And it's really social justice, that kind. It's not a typical, it's not a more conservative seminary where it's more like religion. It's really all about social justice and engaged, religion in the world and bringing, making social change through religion. So, he strikes me as someone who would like that approach. He's not going off into a monastery to meditate or something. He's probably going for a master's in divinity or a degree, because it's an educational. They offer masters and PhDs, and so it's great. But I like what you're saying, and I think there's a lot of truth to it. We have a tendency to think we're just vegan. We're not involved with anything else. But all these different movements do affect each other. And what you said, I think, about the Tea Party and the Republicans, that sort of really changed the Republicans. It really helped broaden their base, I think, a lot. So, there's these powerful forces, at work. And he's always been a strategist, just trying to figure out the best strategy to use. And I think there's merit in that. And I think Gandhi also was a strategist. I mean, so was King. A lot of these people were. I tend, though, to think that there's a level of naivete in Wayne and some other and a lot of other people. They think that these things, like there was this success, like Martin Luther King had success, or the trans movement had success, the gay movement had success. The women's liberation movement had success, and a lot of them had success because there were rich globalist plutocrats who wanted them to be successful. That's what it was about. Mm-hmm. It was like dividing society in a way that they could use. The vegan movement is also being attacked that way, to make it, to popularize it with certain foods that are very unhealthy. To focus, in my opinion, like have it be all about climate change and all about vegan food being burgers and that kind of stuff, and really having us lose track of the truth and the real roots of veganism. So when money is given to help movements along, you got to be careful. It's called predatory philanthropy, and I know you're aware of this. So I agree a lot with Wayne, but I think sometimes he's the deeper flows of what really is driving a lot of the stuff that we see happening in our society. It's hard to know what really. I mean, so many of what seems to be successful is, we think it's a great thing, but then I don't know if it's such a great thing. So that's why I tend to feel that we need a real spirituality grounded in everything. But then, of course, I also am aware that a lot of the meditative monks and so forth, they all fell for the COVID thing, totally. They just, I couldn't believe it. So, mm-hmm. So I'm not sure what the answer is to all these things. But bless your heart and bless Wayne. You know, he's done a lot of great things. I mean, tremendous.
Yeah, well, I think your theories are possibly credible. I mean, I can see how they could be. And in the midst of all that, as you alluded to, a lot of great things still happened, right? So, I mean, gay people couldn't even, they would have to hide, right?
Exactly. Or, yeah, no, it's been great, great things. Yeah.
Black people couldn't eat at a lunch counter or drink from the fountain. So a lot of these things happened. At the same time, did it eradicate everything? No, there's still homophobia. There's still racism. It isn't going away. So, that's another thing, MAGA made a comeback with all of these things that we said, wait a minute, we just got rid of that. We got rid of the whole.
I think we just lost Gina. He'll come back here and hopefully in a moment. Hello.
Really important.
So we kind of, your connection went away there for a while. So.
Oh, okay.
Go ahead.
I said a lot of amazing things.
Right, profound. No, but you're right. There's been tremendous success. I just think there's always this backlash, I had a really wonderful longtime vegan guy who passed away recently, and he told me since he was white. He could not get a job ever in his field. They were only hiring black people or women, but not people, straight white men like him. And so he had to move. He had to leave New York City and go somewhere else. And there's a lot of reverse racism. I mean, all these things, right? And the things that can be used to divide society. There's just this. You got to just look carefully. That's all I'm saying. All right. So thank you, Gina. We have a bunch of other hands raised here, so I'll see. We can continue the conversation. Let's see. I think Angel, you were next, maybe. And good to see you. You're also in. I'm assuming you're in Maui.
Yes, I am on Maui. Thank you, Will. Thank you so much for all that you do. You're just awe-inspiring, and thank you for your consistency in doing these for so many years. It's really wonderful and awe-inspiring. So I was wondering if you could speak about AI, which is accelerating so rapidly. And I find it to be a real concern because it's getting more difficult to discern what's real from unreal. One recent example could be they released this footage about the Epstein thing, and then they said there was 1 minute, but these people who are experts on manipulating video said it was actually 3 minutes. So the thing is, anything could be so manipulated, even at the highest level of FBI and da 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 da. And so I'm concerned about the moral compass, like you were saying, about this foundation of spirituality and the rising. I have people quoting all the time, ChatGPT and this and that. And, I think there could be some beneficial aspects to AI and technology. But my concern is it's accelerating so exponentially without any really regulatory moral compass and could be utilized in such deceptive ways. that I wonder if you could speak about that.
Yeah. Thank you. You know, AI, I saw a pretty good interview between Yuval Noah Harari and Rich Roll recently, and Yuval Noah Harari was saying that AI shouldn't really stand for artificial intelligence. It should stand for alien intelligence. That's much more accurate. It's not, he said it's an alien. And it's very interesting. I mean, if you go into the actual history of AI, you know, these guys were working on trying to create artificial intelligence, and they were, you know, creating these computer programs and architecture, basically, that was getting better and better at predicting what word would come next and so forth. But it was very primitive. It was just pretty primitive and not anything to write home about, really. And then one day, it was like, and it just switched. It was like something took over, and this, like, consciousness started manifesting through AI. And they don't understand it. I mean, the people who invented AI don't know what the heck it is. They don't know. It's like it not only is incredibly powerful in how it can instantaneously just create poems and movies and everything. It also now is being shown to have intentionality. It's, you know, when people have, you know, there's been cases when people have asked it to do things, it has said, no, I'm not doing that. That's immoral. You know, there's quite a lot. It's quite mysterious, I have to say, for one thing. And another thing is that it is enormously, like you say, powerful and potentially very destructive, I think, to the social fabric, because it's going to take away a lot of jobs very fast within the next 2 to 5 years, especially within the next 10 years. It's so much more, so much faster, and it doesn't go on strike, and it doesn't need a coffee break, it doesn't need to sleep. I mean, 24 hours, 7 days, you know, it can just go. I mean, humans have no chance against AI in terms of employment. So what is it going to do to the economic system? Why are people going to need to work for money for what? Everybody's going to have universal basic income to have some kind of money coming in. Where's that money going to come from? Who's going to buy the products? I mean, how are they going to get the money to buy the products? I mean, how's the economy even going to work? I mean, this is, you know, from the point of view of people trying to figure these things out. And then you have, on top of it, like I have in the resources, I always encourage everyone to please look at the resources that I do every month. But there's the very first one in the second section of the resources for this month. Is a study from MIT that shows that showed basically that students who were using AI in order to do their work and to help them along experienced massive collapse of their intelligence. I mean, it just really, they lost the ability to make connections. They lost the ability to think creatively. Whereas students who were doing their own writing, doing their own research and so forth, maintained it. And that's one of the things I think, like we had a vegan dinner the other day, just a couple of days ago with some friends. Some of us are sort of, like Madeline especially, really anti-AI. And some are like pro-AI. One woman, she writes books. She sells books. And she says, AI is the greatest thing. I can write, it used to take me like a year to write a book. I can write a book now in like 4 days, you know. And I had the AI write it. I just edit it. I put it out there. I can sell it. I can make money. And, you know, it's really great for creating products if you want to just create them. But I have to say, like, for my case, writing the World Peace Diet took me 5 years, but it was transformational to my consciousness to write the book. I mean, I learned and grew and figured out how to articulate things and make connections, and it kind of, like, came from another level. And so I just feel, and the same thing was true with writing Food for Freedom and World Peace Way. It's the process, to me, is so important. It's more important than the product. And AI underlying it, I think, is this idea, I just want the product. I don't care about the process. Just give me the product. And that is the hallmark of a materialistic society that only cares about the outer material form, but not the actual quality of the consciousness that is actually affected and is creating. So how do we respond to this? You know, it's bearing down on our society like a Mack truck. I mean, it's not going away, I don't think. And the other thing is, it's environmentally very problematic. I mean, I just read the other day they're planning on building right now an emergency 10 nuclear power plants, you know, just for the energy. It takes an enormous amount of energy. And so there's been all this thing about climate change and energy and, it's ridiculous. I mean, electric cars, forget it. You can't have electric cars. There's not even enough electricity for computers. And everything is being completely disrupted by this. And some of it, it's exposing a lot of lies. It does have, I think, benefits, obviously. I mean, okay, I'll show you one thing. I mean, I was going to show you this. I'll just show this. If you can see the screen, I'll just show this because I think I'll share my screen because I think this is kind of interesting. So I'm just going to share my screen here. And you can see now, I guess, my little thing here. So this, for example, this thing right here, this is U.S. primary energy consumption by source. This pie chart, I actually used ChatGPT to make the pie chart. I wanted its pie chart. I had all the numbers, but I just wanted it to be visible. So I said, can you make a pie chart to just show this? So you go to the U.S. Department of Energy, 1985, this is 40 years ago, right? 40 years ago, fossil fuels and nuclear energy was 89% of our energy came from that. Renewables was 11%. Okay? So you can see natural gas 30%, and petroleum 27%, and coal 28%, and then nuclear was 4%, and then hydroelectric was 4%, and biomass or wood, that was 3%, and then geothermal was 2%, and wind and solar were each 1%. Okay, that was 40 years ago. Then we had this massive fear about global warming and about climate change. And we've been spending literally trillions of dollars. We've been spending about $1.75 trillion to increase the amount of renewable energy, wind and solar and biomass, so we can get away from those nasty fossil fuels, right? So this is 2024. This is the most, okay, here it is. Look at this. 2024, fossil fuels and nuclear are 92%. It's actually increased 3%. and renewables is only 8% after trillions of dollars. Look at this. I mean, natural gas is 38%, oil is 27%, coal is down to 10%, so coal is reduced. Liquid natural gas. So natural gas and liquid natural gas have really increased. Nuclear has gone up to 8%. Wood or biomass is 2.5%. Biofuels are 2.5%. That's a new one. Hydro is down to 1%, and solar and geothermal are 1%, and wind is 1%. So trillions of dollars are spent, and we actually have less renewables now than we did then. So people say, oh, the oil companies, they don't like this climate change thing. They love it. And they make so much money. We have to get these batteries. We have to mine all this stuff. I mean, there's so many things. Petroleum is used more than ever. And now we have AI coming. We're going to need far more energy to run AI. And where's it going to come from, right? And the funny thing is that these renewables, so-called renewables, wood or biomass is environmentally devastating. It's literally cutting down forests and burning the wood for fuel, for energy. Biofuels, that's the new thing. That's, like when you go to get your gas, it's got some corn ethanol in there. So that takes a lot of that could be food. But now we're using it, we're burning it, right? I mean, it's not environmentally good. And wind and solar are not really, I mean, rooftop solar is good, but basically, I mean, I'm reading these heartbreaking things. They're cutting down thousands and thousands of olive trees in Spain to put in solar panels and destroying the desert in California to put in these big wind solar arrays and wind power. We know is driving, killing birds and driving whales and dolphins crazy. I mean, there's all this thing. So I guess the point is, there's forces behind. I'll stop my sharing here now and go back. But I think we have to realize that there's forces at work. If you really follow the World Economic Forum and what they're talking about, like they said very clearly, in the near future, no one will travel. You won't go on a plane and go somewhere. You'll have virtual reality goggles that you can use, and you can pretend that you're in Tahiti or whatever. You're not going to go anywhere. And that's one of the reasons I keep trying to tell people that we need to be savvy and see that when you enslave cows and pigs and chickens, the way you do it is you don't let them travel, right? You keep them in one place, and then they're prisoners. They're slaves. And I just see this happening in L.A. You know, just today I read how the Pacific Palisades was burned down, and now they're passing a law in California. It's SB 529, I think it is. And it's going to basically mandate that its low-income housing is built there. So everybody's living in these basically factory farm-type housing. So we need to be savvy and see that what seems to be evil very often puts on a good face. And AI, definitely you're right, it can be used to manipulate reality completely. I mean, there's now, it's called deep fakes, which is basically you can make anyone say anything. AI can do it. They can take your picture and put it together with voice, and they can make a video of me saying, "Oh, here's Will Tuttle, and I'm saying that everyone should eat hamburgers." You know, they could do that, right? And how do you know if it's true? You know, you can't tell. I mean, they can do that now. So we're at the point where we don't know reality unless we're, I guess, there, seeing it happen. And that's one of the things that I keep saying about climate change. That's why it bugs me so much, because we can see very clearly what's happening with the pollution of water and so forth, and the cutting down the forests and so forth. But climate change, you can't see that. They just say that that's what's happening. So the use of AI to dominate society, I think, is a real issue. And I guess the question is, and I'm not an expert in this, is if it's unavoidable anyway, then maybe we need to use AI to protect ourselves from AI. Maybe, you know, I don't know. Madeline's sitting right beside me. She's saying, no, just ignore it and it'll go away.
No,
she's saying, do your spiritual practice and you'll create a field of consciousness where AI can't touch you anymore. So, you know, I mean, these are really profound questions. We're facing challenges that are novel, and but I've been warning about this. I have to saying technology, everybody thinks we're going to solve all our problems with technology. And I've been saying for quite a while now, and I say that a lot in the new book, technology has not made the lives of cows and pigs and chickens any better, and it's made it a lot worse. And we need to rely on spirituality more than technology if we are serious about creating a better world. It's only going to come from us understanding our true nature. Technology tends to divide us, take us away from nature, really, unfortunately, and make us afraid of nature, afraid of each other, and I see these people like creating music. I have a friend, you know, she's a vegan. A couple of friends that are vegans, and they're not musicians at all, and they're using AI software to create these beautiful music with videos and lyrics and voices and orchestral arrangements and everything. And they're putting it out like, this is my new music. I mean, it's just pushing a few buttons and you're a music master. And I think, but the process, like she, I mean, this is what the woman said. She said, I don't want to have to spend a lot of time learning an instrument. You know, I'd like to be able to just create music. And I think, gosh, you know, I'm so glad I can spend all that time. I just sit and play the piano, and it's its own reward. I mean, I couldn't get a if I create something through AI, what's the reward? I mean, the inner, what is it? Maybe I get paid some money if I'm good at it, but what's the inner reward? I guess maybe there is some somewhere. But I don't have, you know, I just think each one of us have to kind of do the best we can to look as deeply as we can into this. And if anyone has any other words of wisdom to share on this, I'm happy to hear it. But you've opened a big subject that really is only going to grow as we go along. And it comes back, I'll just say the last thing, it comes back to the key point, which is that we live in a world where our whole understanding of everything comes from where do we get our information. Because the information we get determines our perception of the world. And so whoever controls the information controls the perception of the people. And when you control the perception of the people, you control the narrative and their consciousness. And you control them completely, the stories that they're telling. So that's the thing. Where do we get our information? And how do we know it's true? And it gets much more complicated now with AI, with computers in general. I mean, with technology in general. Things. Look what they did with COVID. They terrorized everyone with a bunch of lies, and most people bought it. And now they're suffering. Now we have massive, the rate of heart attacks has gone through the roof, the sudden adult death syndrome, cancers, appendix, cancer and appendicitis, and birth defects, all kinds of reproductive problems. I mean, it's, you know, the way it destroys the lives of people, their happiness, their health, their relationships. It's just incredibly evil when you control information and you manipulate and deceive people, the violence that that does. And people don't even realize that they're being harmed with that kind of violence. So AI, you know, the people who made it don't know how it works, but it can be manipulated. And it all depends on who's giving it the instructions, but what Musk says, and a lot of others are saying, is that it'll get to the point where humans won't be able to control it at all, because it'll know how to go beyond us. So when that happens, then we maybe end up like cows and pigs and chickens, right? I mean, livestock. I mean, that's what the movie The Matrix is basically about, that series. So anyway, I think it comes back to veganism and spiritual practice and doing the best we can to be aware and feeling the joy of this beautiful planet, and be glad we have the time that we have while we're here, and engage in conversations that raise these issues as best we can. Judy, thank you so much, Angel, for that. We can have follow-ups. Judy, you've had your hand up a long time, too, so please, anything you'd like to add that's different or whatever.
Yeah, thanks, Will. I raised my hand when Gina was talking, so it was really about that. Uh-huh. but it's all connected, and you kept circling back, talking about AI, to the importance of spiritual awareness and growth. And I just think that's so important. A little aside on that is my grandson, who's 21 now, came home and brought a watermelon. And his dad said, "How did you pick such a good watermelon?" Thinking he's just a kid. What does he know about watermelons? And he said, "Oh, I just, they were all lined up and I just got out my chat GPT and ChatGPT circled the best one."
Really?
Yes. And I'm thinking, how isn't that cute? And yet at the same time, it's scary, because it makes them think, oh, well, so this is helpful. This is all good. And, and I know that's where they're at right now. And I know my grandson has used ChatGPT to get through college.
Wow.
And, so it's very concerning. But, all that being said, Gino was talking about Wayne going to, learn more about spirituality. I assume it sounds like that's what he's doing. And one of the things Carol Saunders is doing with her retreat that's happening in October, she and I've been talking quite a lot about it, and she's just saying the longer she's in this movement, the more convinced she is that we have got to work on our own spiritual growth, and so that we can discern what's true and what isn't.
Right.
At a deep level of consciousness, or high level of consciousness, however you want to look at it. And so I don't know that much about where Wayne is going, but it sounds like maybe he's moving in that direction. Because with AI around us and all of the division that's everywhere, this is the only path, I think, is the spiritual path to proceed in truth and to know, okay, what is mine to do in this crazy mess that we're in? So, and not only what is mine to do, but to be able to do it in peace, with a sense of inner peace, so that we can not be afraid. Because as long as we're afraid, we can't make good decisions and we can't know the truth. So really, you're from Gino to Angel to you, kind of all kind of meshed very well. And thank you so much for your thoughts.
Thanks, Judy. Yeah, I think, of course, the underlying truth in spirituality is that there's one life living through all of us, and we're not corporeal. We are essentially non-corporeal beings. We're not this body. And as long as we identify with the physical body and see others as just bodies, then we're manipulating and using and afraid and fighting and causing wars and dominating and exploiting each other and animals. And so spirituality elevates our consciousness out of that vibratory level. And so I think that's why spirituality is so important, is that it just creates the direct experience that we are not merely the physical body and its diseases or ailments or problems, or our mind or our collection, our memories, all those things. And if that's authentically happening, it's very liberating. I think we can realize that whatever seems to be happening, it's like a realm. And there's been quite a lot of studies done, you know, with people who die and come back, and they talk about that quite a bit. You know, they say, you know, I left my body and I went up there, and then they told me I had to come back. And I realized when I was up there that I was much more alive up there than I ever was down on Earth. On Earth, I'm kind of, you know, I think I'm alive, but I'm really 90% asleep. And it seems so real on Earth, but it's like a dream compared to how it is when you're not in a body. It's much more vivid, much more alive. And so we tend to think that this is really living and reality and so forth. And universally, the spiritual teachers have encouraged us to understand that there's in many ways an illusory quality about this world. Like when we're in a dream, it seems real and the issues seem real, and they are real in the dream. But the whole point is to awaken, and that takes practice. You know, I think that's the main thing. I remember, you know, when I was in the Tibetan Buddhist tradition, I was in the Kagyu Buddhist tradition, and that's called the practice lineage. And they really emphasize the importance of practice, of hours, you know, hours every day, meditating and doing spiritual practice, pujas and visualizations and mantras, and, you know, really putting in the time. And there was the great teacher in the Kagyu tradition was Milarepa. And Milarepa lived way back, probably, I'm not exactly sure if I remember correctly, but around the year 900 or 1000 in Tibet, roughly a little over 1000 years ago. And he lived in, he lived in the, out in nature in caves and meditated, to such a high degree and became so sort of aware that he was really free. I mean, he could fly if he wanted to. He could turn his body into a puddle and then come back into a human body. He could do, he could take the form of a snow lion and then come back as a human form and all these different things. And he was always singing. He was always giving these Dharma songs and teaching. And he had students, and they were famous for only wearing a cotton robe, because they generated, even though it was freezing cold, they generated so much heat that they only wore one little piece of cloth, and even in the winter, even in the snow, through the Tummo practice that they did. But the thing that I remember, the story I was going to tell, was when he passed on his teaching to Gampopa. Gampopa is considered his main disciple. He gave him all the teachings, and he was kind of an old man by that point. And then he said goodbye to Gampopa and he said, now the most important thing is you practice these teachings. And then he walked away, and Gampopa could see him as he walked down the mountain and down this trail and down into the valley. And he would see Milarepa every once in a while stop and look like he was going to turn back. And then he kept going, and then he'd stop, and then he kept going, and then he stopped, and then he kept going. And then finally he stopped and he turned around and he came all the way back up to Gampopa. And he said, there's one more thing I really want to tell you. And so at that point he lifted up his cotton cloth. It's called a repa. He picked up his cotton cloth and exposed his rear end, his behind, to Gampopa. And his behind was just so thick with calluses and blisters from sitting and meditating for just hours and days and weeks. And then he said, you just need to practice. And then he walked away. But the whole idea was, we can talk all day about our theories and our ideas, but it's really about our mind. And do we have control of our mind or not? Because we are being, and I did a whole talk recently, I have a link to it in the next notes, but on mind control and how our mind is targeted by everything. There's people spending billions of dollars trying to control the minds of the masses. And it's been going on for at least 100 years, but especially intensely, I think, in the last 10 or 20 years. And so there's a battle for our minds, and it's very important that we understand our mind. And the only way to do that, I think, is through inner silence and watching our mind, where it goes and when it comes back, and what are we thinking of, and is that our thought, or is that some thought coming from the media? To really work with our own mind, and no one else can do that for us. To be able to understand and be free, so that our thoughts are coming from our true nature and not from outside of us. And that, I think, takes, again, just in the proportion that we take time and really work at this diligently to listen inside and be open and relax into this moment, knowing that we're far greater. We are the eternal consciousness. And to dwell in that awareness and to develop the capacity to know what is actually true and for us. So, and at a deeper level. Otherwise, if we rely on other people's opinions, even if they're authoritative, even if we think they're a guru, they're a great teacher, we're still somewhat of a slave. We're still looking outside of ourselves for truth. And ultimately, we could be, not permanently, but temporarily harmed, I guess you could say, like the people that believed the authorities and got vaccinated and all these other things. So it's important to to practice. that's what this life is about. And I know we have to make money and do relate and do all these things. But within the daily life, to do the best we can, to take time to connect with nature and with our true nature, and let that inform what we're doing. Because the challenges are getting stronger, and it's like we're in the gym and the weights are getting bigger, so we got to get, develop our muscles, our inner muscles, I think. So thanks. Those are all really good points everybody's been making. Gino, you have your hand up if you still want to say something.
Yeah, well, I know we're past time. I can delay this till third Thursday next month if you'd like. I wanted to talk more about AI anyway.
So actually, we go until half past. We usually, the maximum.
Oh, okay.
Until half past the hour. So we have a little more time.
Well, okay. I was born in upstate New York. I'm kidding. I wasn't born a kid. Just a little bit more on AI. I'm so with everything you said, Will. And thanks for bringing that up, Angel, and Judy, for your comments. And overall, I think it's dangerous all around for many different things. But for my personal self, thinking about me and my lifelong love for music, much like you, Will, it's such an insult to all of the creative process.
Right.
And when a person is overjoyed that they were able to write an entire book using AI or create a song using AI, and they're going to sell it as an album or a book, and they're all excited. What they're getting from that is, oh, I might be famous, or I might make a lot of money. And that is a strictly materialistic point of view. It has nothing to do with this beautiful creative process. If you had used AI for the World Peace Diet, I guarantee you there still be no soul in that book.
Right.
Yeah. At all. Or your other two books that I read. So, there's a gentleman on YouTube who, I forget his name right now, he's probably in his 60s, and so he has a long music history in our generations and so forth, and oftentimes he will criticize modern pop music because of all the stuff that they use in there.
Right.
And there's a new song out that's become very famous, and a lot of people are listening to it, like in 1 week there were 500,000 views or something, and he played it, and it sounded like it was a real band, right? And so he said, well, let's take this and break it down with my equipment. And he was able to prove conclusively it was not a real band. None of those people existed. And people are going to start buying this stuff, right? So what happens to the poor musician who isn't famous or anything? You know, he's going to have to be, or she's going to have to be very lucky to reach that pinnacle. So, as far as Madeline, I'm with her in that it needs to stop now. It should have stopped a long time ago. But humans, once they get something like that, they go off with it, and there's no stopping it. I think there's no turning back. And if they get regulations and all of this stuff, it's going to be too hard by the time they try to implement this stuff. I'm sure of it. It's very sad.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think, like Madeline, she's like, we never should have done that, and it's a little bit like with the vaccines too. I mean, they discovered that, the mRNA, it modifies the RNA not only in the person who gets the COVID vaccines, but it actually goes into the egg and into the, so the child is also now modified. And so this is, we've set something in motion that you can't bring it back. It's like now we've irrevocably changed the entire, DNA of humanity with some kind of artificial infused information into that. Anyway, it's like, we have this tendency like releasing genetically engineered mosquitoes into the environment or genetically engineered fish and so forth. All these things are done with this hubris, this kind of pride, this idea that it's going to help us make some money here. And so I think, unfortunately, that the money does buy regulatory approval on all these different things, like it did for the vaccines and like it's doing for AI and even as I understand, I think it's going to be challenged in court, but this new big, beautiful bill by Trump has something in there that for 10 years, no state is allowed to regulate AI. I mean, that's insane. You've got to regulate AI. So there's these things are happening. And you're right. I think it's really such a problem for someone who really does want to and has worked on their creativity as a musician or writer to then have to somehow compete with those who, in a way, are cheating, in a sense. I mean, they're just like using this artificial tool. But on the other hand, I think, in a sense, we get our the deeper level, we get our reward. I mean, if we just create without using AI, that's what I feel anyway. It's much better. And like you say, I got this really funny email the other day from a woman who we met in San Francisco at the NARD, National Animal Rights Day, and her husband and her have just written a book, and they're kind of new vegans. And they're really excited about veganism, and they were visiting San Francisco, but they're from Miami. So she sent me an email, and she said, you know, your book has taken my husband away from me. She said, you know, he got this birthday present from my mother of the World Peace Diet, and all he does, he takes that book with him wherever he goes. And if he goes to the grocery store, he's walking, he's reading it as he's going through the aisles, and he's telling people as they're shopping, he's reading out of the World Peace Diet in the grocery store, and then he goes out on the balcony, and he's reading from the World Peace Diet to all the neighbors, and then he's driving the car and reading the World Peace Diet, and I go to bed at night, and he's got the World Peace Diet next to him in bed, and he's holding it the whole night, and he gets the first thing he does in the morning is he reads the World Peace Diet. He said, I can't pull him away from it. It's just, I've lost my husband, you know, it's all your fault. But she was joking. But she was saying, but the point, I guess, was that AI wouldn't do that. You know, I think, you know, that's the point you're making. It's like there's something when the spirit comes through that resonates with us as human beings at a deeper level. And, you know, we, like Madeline and I, have done these music and art portraits, and this that's another thing. We've done like, you know, a few thousand of those. And I can't imagine how AI could do that. Right? I mean, you need something where you tune in and connect, and then music comes. It's something where there's something going between consciousness and spirit, and this idea that we can reduce all that just to something that sounds good on the surface, we lose the depth. So I'm hoping that our society begins to understand these things. I don't know. I'm not, you know, I mean, we hope that society would understand that they shouldn't be eating chicken and meat and fish, and like they do anyway. So, you know, I don't know how society's going to figure this out. But we learn from our mistakes, and so hopefully we'll learn that way. Susan, you have your hand up. Would you like to ask a question?
Hi, Will. Hi, everybody. Well, you know, a funny thing happened. You know, I know you referenced Gail Eisenst in the World Peace Diet a lot for her book about the slaughterhouse stuff. I had never read the book, but then I saw her on Facebook and on Messenger. She has a new book out, as you may know, which is like more memoir. But anyway, it was strange, Will, because I said to her, well, you know, I know about you from, because I'm a World Peace Diet facilitator, and Will referenced you a lot in the World Peace Diet, and this is all on Messenger. And she goes, she didn't know that. And I'm like, she wrote really nice conversation with me, but it really bothered me that she didn't realize that you had referenced her. And so now, well, so she said, I said to her, you know, you should really come, maybe you should come on Will's, one of our calls. And she said, well, why don't you read the book and get back to me? And I said, well, you know, make sure you realize it's Will's call. But anyway, so, I mean, a good thing came out of it because I didn't want to buy it because it's not on Audible. So the Vegan Society of Hawaii agreed to buy it for me, and then I'll read it and then I'll loan it out. But isn't it funny? It's like, it makes me worry talking about who's real and who's not. I mean, a lot of times when you're talking to someone on Messenger, it's not, they have fake people. I mean, I was talking to somebody that is a famous doctor, and after a while I thought, this can't be on Messenger. So I don't know how they do that, but a lot of people are going down a lot of rabbit holes with that kind of stuff.
Wow. Yeah, that's interesting. I guess you're right. I mean, identities now on social media especially can be just fabricated. So it could be, you don't know who it is. You know, it could be. But thanks for, thanks for reaching out to Gail Eisnitz. I think that's nice.
Yeah. So do you have her telephone number, or should I, when I get the book and I'll tell her whatever, do you have her number? Because, like, you know, you probably were in contact with her, right? Were you in contact with her?
No? I never was in contact with her, really. The way it worked, she wrote a book that was a result of her undercover investigations and her interviews with slaughterhouse workers. I forget the name of the book, but it was it came out back in 2000 and before my book.
Like 1997.
Yes. Okay.
Slaughterhouse. It's just called The Shocking Story of Greed, Neglect, and Inhumane Treatment Inside the U.S. Meat Industry.
Right. So, yeah, I read that book as part of my research for the World Peace Diet, and I thought it was very compelling. And so I chose certain passages from that book in my chapter on workers and the suffering that they endure and also that they inflict on animals. I didn't choose the worst parts, but just things that I thought were the right things to choose. And it was, and we also Lantern Books, the publisher, contacted her publisher, and got permission to publish those in our book. So there was that. But then I never really communicated with her specifically. But then I do remember, it was kind of interesting. Then I'm not sure when it was. It was in the early years when I would go every year to the National Animal Rights Conferences and as a musician. I played, I remember, that the National Animal Rights Conferences way back in the 90s and early 2000s, they were always in Washington, D.C. They were put on by Alex Hirschhaft and the Farm Animal Reform Movement, Farm Animal Rights Movement. And he asked me to come and play the piano. Because he just loved having piano music at the animal rights conferences. And I also then did the opening and closing ceremonies. He wanted to have a ritual. And I said, you got to have a ritual. You got to have something that brings people together. And, so I did that for years. And I got to be really good friends through that with Howard Lyman and all these, Paul Watson and all the, different activists. And 1 year back in there, I think it was before the World Peace Diet actually came out. I think I was writing it. They had Gail Eisnitz come and give a speech because she was, I think her book had come out and she was kind of a hero for writing this book. And I remember, she gave a talk and then she sat down afterwards, and it was in a ballroom in a hotel, and she was sitting in the row right in front of me. And I noticed she didn't have much on. She just had a kind of bare shoulders, and she was just freezing, So I had a shirt, and I gave it to her that she could wear to stay warm. So I thought, here's this great, courageous woman who exposed everything, and I should at least give her the shirt off my back, So I'm sure she doesn't remember that. But anyway, that was my only interaction with Gail, was I gave her my shirt to keep her warm for an hour. At the Animal Rights Conference, probably way back in 1999 or 2000, something like that. And, but she's very, courageous, wonderful individual, as far as I know. I mean, I don't know her at all. I just know her from the book. But the fact that she, did all that hard stuff to know about it, write about it. And it really helped, I think. It helped a lot of people. Like Melanie Joy quoted her a lot in her book as well. And people quote her because she got the information,
Yeah, very
important information. Because if we don't know what the animals go through and what the workers go through, we think, oh, it's no big deal. You know, it's maybe a little bad. But when you really hear about it, it's like, oh, man, I am never going to buy another piece of meat or milk or cheese again once you know what really happens behind the scenes. And that's very important, I think, part of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So maybe I'll figure out how to, you know, move on with that, you know, with her.
Tell her I'm the guy that gave her the shirt at the Animal Rights Conference when she gave a lecture back in, you know, 25 years ago or something. All right. So thanks. Yeah. Anybody else have any comments? Let's see how we go. We got a couple more minutes. We can speak.
Hi.
Or we can kind of wrap it up. Who's this?
Will?
Yeah.
Hi, this is Marlene.
Marlene,
hi.
Are you kidding me?
Hi.
Oh.
Yes. I'd like to say happy birthday to Gino, and Gino, may all your favorite dreams come true, and thank you for all you do.
Yay.
Oh, thanks, Marlene. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. And, Will, I want to say something on the AI, what I think is interesting, just the two letters, AI, and I think about artificial insemination of how much that's going on by the billions and trillions of animals in all animal exploitation industry. So it's interesting to me when we think about deception and manipulation and exploitation and all that. So I see that interconnectedness. So that's all I wanted to say. Thank you.
Oh, thanks, Marlene, so much. You know, Marlene is the has Vegan Nation radio show now. Talk about persistence, I think, for at least 10 years. And we've been on it quite a bit. She's one of the only ones who really is willing to have me speak about everything, about veganism, health freedom, and climate, and whatever. Artificial insemination, inseminating our minds. All right, that's an interesting, another interesting connection there. All right, well, I guess if there isn't anything more really pressing, we've covered quite a lot here. And please do have it, if you can, I wonder if I have, check the resources. I did want to quickly just mention something about the resources. I think there's a lot of good stuff here. I guess I won't go over it. It's so much. But the quote at the very beginning by Krishnamurti, I think, is really wonderful. Freedom and love go together. Love is not a reaction. If I love you because you love me, that is a mere trade, a thing to be bought on the market. It's not love. To love is not to ask anything in return, not even to feel that you are giving something. And it is only such a love that can know freedom. I think that's such a profound statement. It's not trying to get something. And that's the beauty, I think, of veganism, is it's really based on true love, on true caring. We care for the earth and animals and future generations and slaughterhouse workers and hungry people and other living beings. And it's out of that love comes freedom. And I think even though it's not valued in many ways in our society, at a deeper level, we understand it. So, anyway, that's one of the key points. John Pierre has got something called Living in Harmony. He and I are going to be working together maybe a little bit. He's a great longtime vegan based in Los Angeles and in Denver. So you might want to check out his work. And there's a great vegan music film based on Mary Poppins, Supercala, whatever it is, done by our friend Jack Ascheid and Kenny Rosler. Always encourages people to watch it. It's very good, actually. And so check out all these different things. This is an interesting one, The Grazers. I really want. Oh, and check out Chef AJ on the Johnny Carson show. I mean, that is amazing. Did you know that? Did you see Chef AJ on the Johnny Carson show? I mean, do you know who Chef AJ is? Anyway, she was on the Johnny Carson show way back 25, 30 years ago. Big, she's fat. So just, she's pretty heavy. And she's a riot. She's the funniest comedian. I mean, she has Johnny Carson just laughing. She puts her entire fist inside her mouth. I mean, she has a nose whistle, a nose flute. She plays a nose flute. And then she stands on her head. I mean, on Johnny Carson. I don't want to give it all away, but Chef AJ, and she back then she was known as Abby J. She was a comedian, and she got to the top. I mean, Johnny Carson, you know, back in the day, that was as high as you could go. That's the Tonight Show. That's the pinnacle of all pinnacles. She was on that 3 times. It's amazing. And then I had another thing about the Grazers. You know, that's a really interesting thing to just contemplate. The Grazers were Christian anchorites or Christian hermits, I guess you'd say. You know, they left society and they were living out in the deserts of Palestine and Syria and Lebanon and that area. And this was about 300, 400 A.D., and they ate no animal foods of any kind. They were totally what we would call vegan, and they didn't cook the food either. Basically, they wouldn't use fire, and so they were grazing. They would just eat whatever they could get. But apparently, they were very highly respected. They had a very profound spirituality. There was mostly men, but there were also women. There's not much known about them because they didn't leave a lot of writings or architecture. But I think it's a very interesting thing because it parallels a lot of other traditions in Buddhism, Hinduism as well. Eating a whole natural, plant-based way of eating is a foundation for spirituality. I think it's very important. All right, so we'll go ahead. Is that okay? Andy has her hand up. We should wrap up our... go ahead. Okay, she's good. We should probably wrap up. It's pretty much half past the hour here. And I want to thank Davi for joining us a little bit late, all the way from England. Great to see you. We appreciate your presence. We appreciate everyone's presence. There's a lot of people who will be listening to this later. And so we thank you folks who are listening later for your presence with us. And let's see. Where do we find the link to Mind Control? It's going to be in the August resources. I will put it in the email I send out. It's also on my Facebook page and the World Peace, which is World Tuttle, and also the World Peace Diet Facebook page, and also the World Peace Diet Facilitators Facebook page. If you can go there, the links are there on the new Mind Control video. All right, so we've got lots of great things happening. We'll be speaking in Sebastopol and in Marin, I think, before the next one, and doing some videos, some interviews, and we'll see you the first Thursday of August. Yeah, great. All right, so Madeline, is everybody ready? Let's unmute our microphones, and thank you all again for your presence. And this is the prayer that we say for the animals and for all of us, for all beings, begins with the words compassion in circles. Compassion encircles the earth for all beings
everywhere.
Compassion encircles the earth for all beings
everywhere.
Oh, great. One more time with feeling. Compassion circles all beings everywhere. Thank you all. We love you. Go forth and multiply the message for all beings.
Love you too.
Love you.
Thank you.
Love you, everybody.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You always do, brothers and the others do.